Following Up is our new Without Borders podcast series, where we explore the world of media through the eyes of journalists. Join us as we deep dive into journalists' careers, uncover their daily working lives, the priorities and challenges they're facing, and how they're adapting to today's changing media landscape. Each episode, the media specialists at Taito are putting journalists in the hot seat and delving into the topics and stories that they really care about and getting the inside scoop on best practice for media relations.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of Following Up. In this series, we interview some of Europe's most respected journalists to get to know them better and understand their vision of the media industry. In today's episode, we are joined by Roland Lindner, US business correspondent at FAZ, which is one of the leading national newspapers in Germany. Roland has been working as a journalist since 1996. Based in New York City, he has been covering the business sector in the US for the past 20 years. I'm Bastian, I specialize in German media relations at Taito.
And I'm Pauline, a French media specialist at Taito.
Welcome to the Following Up podcast, Roland.
Hi, Bastian. Nice to talk to you.
Really nice having you. So to kick things off, FAZ is actually an abbreviation for Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the publication Roland is working for. And while it doesn't need any introduction when you are in Germany, it does need if you're on an international or you speak with an international audience. And Roland, you are an expert, I think, to introducing FAZ to someone outside of Germany. How do you introduce it usually?
Yeah, I can tell you it takes a little more work than in Germany. In Germany, it's obviously quite obvious who we are. And in Germany, I really sometimes even have to spell out the entire name. Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung or FAZ, it's one of the biggest German daily newspapers. We're called Allgemeine as in general. That means we are a newspaper that is not only specialized in business, but we have politics, business, arts, travel, technology, everything in our newspaper. We have been founded in 1949. We have our overall mission. Our overall mission is like the strengthening of the democratic order and of, you can say, soziale Marktwirtschaft, social market economy. So this is kind of like our principle. We are an independent company, so we are different from some other newspapers that we are not like a public company. We are not like beholden to any stockholders. We belong, the majority of us belongs to a foundation that supports universities, museums, that gives awards for scientists, and that gives us a high degree of independence. And maybe one more thing that's different for us is we do not have like one chief editor like most newspapers. We have four what we call Herausgeber, like the publishers. So we have like a politics Herausgeber, for example, or a business Herausgeber, and they sort of decide on the overall direction of the newspaper. And what they do, what this allows us to have, or the idea behind this is kind of to have sort of a pluralistic spirit in our newspaper that sort of allows for a difference of perspectives. That's why we have those four publishers. So that's who we are.
Amazing. I already learned something. And what is your role at FAZ and how does a typical workday look like?
So I am the US business correspondent. I am based in New York. So I write mostly business stories and I write mostly corporate stories. So not so much about the overall economy or what the Federal Reserve does. We have somebody in Washington covering that. I really cover mostly companies. So I would cover what Tesla, Apple, Google, Microsoft are doing on any given day.
And in your role, what makes a company or spokesperson compelling to feature in your articles?
Yeah, it can be for different reasons. I mean, size is probably an obvious reason, like just the biggest companies in the world are American companies, most of them. And so it's obvious that whatever, and sometimes whatever small thing Apple does is very relevant to me, or what Meta does is relevant to me. But it's not just size though, it's also a particular German angle, for example. So if companies are particularly have a particular big presence in Germany, or also what German companies do here in the US is very relevant for me. And then sometimes it's really just about, other than those obvious criteria, you know, just kind of the interesting stories, interesting people, things that are maybe not so obvious to everybody, but that I just think will be an interesting story to tell.
From what I learned from you is that what I read between the lines when I was in touch with you is that you are less looking for the story, but also for interesting people. And then you go dive deep with them into an interview, and then you look for the story yourself. You know what I mean?
No, you have to explain that one more time. I'm not exactly sure.
No worries. It's a very specific question. So while PRs oftentimes pitch storylines, I have the feeling that you're not looking for the final storyline, but instead look for interesting people and person to interview, and then dive deep into where the story could be and really try to understand it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't always know, like, right from the outset how a story will end up in the paper. I mean, all I need to know in the beginning is that a person that I talk to is interesting for whatever reason, and that person has potential to provide me with a story or a part of the story. And then I talk to that person, let's say if it's a CEO interview, and then it really depends on how it goes, how does the interview go, and it can sometimes go in a whole different direction, or that particular person talks about some current event that's happening, and that just makes it like the best angle for the story. So it really depends.
Yeah, makes sense. Back to you again. You studied business administration, and what I found really interesting is that right after your studies, you started working as a journalist, which is quite an unusual move. Where's it coming from? Did you have a moment of realization where you thought you want to become a journalist?
Yeah, I had more of a moment of an identity crisis towards the end of my college time, because I thought, so going all the way back, originally I did math for a couple of semesters at college, and that was a total disaster. And then I was like, okay, I have to find something else. And then I went and studied business, but without ever clearly knowing what to do. I just assumed I would do some sort of corporate management job. And then towards getting closer to the degree, I kind of realized, I'm not sure I actually really want to do that. And then I kind of had to think about, what can I do with this degree that is actually not a management position in a company? And so yeah, at some point, the idea of business journalism came up, and so that where I could still bring in my business degree, but do something that seemed sort of more exciting to me. And then I somehow found my way in there.
You've now been in journalism for more than two decades. And I was wondering, was there even an online version of FAZ when you started working there?
I'm actually not even sure. We might have had a very nascent version of it, but it was definitely an afterthought at this point and very tiny. What was very big at the time, though, was our actual newspaper. It was more like a catalog, and especially on weekend editions when we would have all the help wanted ads, all the job listings, and it was like our newspaper was massively physically big. So that was clearly the dominant part of our business. That, of course, has totally changed. The newspapers are much, much smaller, the actual newspaper, and now, of course, online is much, much bigger.
This was probably also the biggest change you experienced while being a US correspondent, right? Like the move from print to bigger focus on online, or was there something else?
It definitely was. It definitely was transformative and disruptive for us as a company, and for every single one of us in terms of how we work on a daily basis. Because what used to be true, like a clear, so when is our deadline every day at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the whole work is geared towards that, that is totally changing, because of course with the internet you have to be sort of always on and you have to always produce.
When you moved to the US, many of the big tech companies today have still been a startup or not even like started at all. What how was it like I feel like it's one of the most exciting times to be in the US, especially as a correspondent. How did you experience it, the rise of big tech?
Yeah, when I moved there, Facebook wasn't even founded. So it's really crazy. Some of the biggest companies that we have now were not even founded or barely founded. So yeah, I mean, that has been the massive change over the years. I mean, in the beginning, when I moved there in 2002, the companies that I wrote about were basically like the old economy companies. You know, I would write much more about the car companies and pharmaceutical companies than I would today. I still do that, but of course now it's much, much more dominated by tech. And also tech is not just tech companies, but also the tech aspect sort of, you know, is seeping into every other industry as well. So many of the stories from other industries also tend to be tech stories in many ways, because those stories are about the transformation of industries.
In the last few years, the news agenda became busier and busier, I feel like. Of course, it started with COVID kind of, then we had just like in the last few months, we had Silicon Valley Bank, we had FTX, the crash of FTX. And is this something that's just I'm feeling, or is this something you experience as a journalist as well, that the news agenda is getting faster and faster? It's changing faster and faster.
I mean, I don't know. It's always, I feel like all my time here in the US has been very busy. There's always been some crisis or some major story. We had the big financial crisis of 2008, and we had many, many big news events that dominated our coverage. What makes things definitely much, much busier for us is that, I mean, yes, the whole digital world, just, it does increase the news flow. It does increase the need for us to produce and produce fast. And so this definitely changes it a lot, and this definitely makes things busier. Are there more news stories today than there were 10 years ago, 15 years ago? I'm not sure.
And how do you prioritize in those busy times?
How do I prioritize? It really, it can be difficult, because of course I cover a lot. I cover all of corporate America. And so I do have to prioritize, yes. Sometimes it's clear what I have to prioritize. The news is Elon Musk is buying Twitter, then it's obvious that I will write about that. And sometimes it's not so clear. I just really sometimes have to go with my gut, or also with what my editors tell me they want, and just discuss what we think is the most relevant thing for our reader. And that can be really different for every story.
And as a business reporter, could you tell us what areas interest you the most, and what do you find the most exciting about them?
I think, as we touched upon a little earlier, generally, a lot of what I do is covered, of my coverage today is tech for sure. And I would say more than half. And I also do find it among the most exciting things, because it's just whatever tech does has effects on so many things. And so obviously the rise of AI is one of the most fascinating things that we're going through right now.
And is there any story that comes immediately to your mind that you think is the most interesting you've worked on, or that you are the most proud of?
I find that very difficult to say. I find it very difficult to say. Like, what story really stays with me even like a year after or years after? I really find it difficult. I mean, the things that I still probably think about the most are the stories that involve like a lot of a big human aspect of things. And, you know, that could have been just like my first COVID report from New York, for example, or or just really reports about single people that are that just fascinated me. So not necessarily a CEO interview, but so I did this one story about the people in New York that collect cans and bottles for a living. So that's just a random example. In New York, it's different than in Germany. You really get only 5 cents or something. So people usually don't recycle. So it's poor people that pick up the cans from everywhere, and the bottles from the trash cans. And I just followed one person around. That's just a story that stayed for me longer, because it also said a lot about what's going on in a big city like New York. So these are sometimes the things that have a big human aspect that stay with me.
Sounds interesting. With how many people do you speak in a week? Like, how many interviews do you have roughly in a regular week?
Very different to say. Also depends on how you, like, is it an interview? Mm-hmm. Like, I interview a person and I'm probably going to publish an interview, or is it just the source that I'm talking to? It's really a little hard to give a number. Also, so many things are non-verbal, I actually don't talk on the phone with people anymore or through Zoom, but it's much more through messaging or emailing. So obviously I talk to a lot of people, but it's not so terribly many. I don't talk to dozens and dozens of people a day on the phone. So I wouldn't say that.
And looking back at all the people you met, is there one exciting story that stands out because it was, I don't know, very awkward, because it was different than you expected, or just very funny?
One maybe a little awkward situation that I found a little awkward the second time I interviewed Bill Gates. So I think that was like maybe 2 years after the first time, and I just walked in and said, I guess just as an icebreaker, but it was kind of stupid. I just said, hi, oh, well, we've met 2 years ago, and sort of like implying then, of course, Bill Gates, you must remember who I am, even though of course, Bill Gates does not remember who I am. And so all he said, like, he just said one word, but it was really kind of, he only said, oh, super. And that word super really was a little sarcastic, as in, of course, I have no idea who you are, but I mean, you know, fine, we met 2 years ago. So I was really a little embarrassed by that. But yes.
So I imagine you haven't done this again.
I have not. No.
Who else have you interviewed, like very major tech personalities besides Bill Gates?
Bill Gates I did a few times, and he's actually, I really like interviewing him. He's great to interview. He always has something interesting to say. Other people, Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, Sheryl Sandberg. I've not interviewed Elon Musk, but I have interviewed his mother, who is a model, who has a career as a model, who's interesting as a person as well. And lots of other tech boom, Meg Whitman. This year, I did a person who I found very interesting. He's Michael Wiebach. He's the CEO of MasterCard, and he's from Germany, and so he's a German guy who's leading this massive American company. So a lot of people, I think, might not know that, and I found him very interesting.
I wasn't actually aware of it, that he's German. And is there someone you absolutely would love to interview, but didn't have the chance yet? I guess Elon Musk is someone you would love to interview. Is there someone else?
So I guess I'm not sure. I mean, of course, I would interview Elon Musk, but would I really want to interview Elon Musk? I find
it sounds like him. It's more like as a reporter, you would love to, right? Like.
I mean, sure, if I have the opportunity, I totally would. I just find a lot of the interviews with him a little, ultimately, not so insightful. And I think the more you learn about him, the more you kind of feel a lot of the things you say you have to take with a big, big, massive grain of salt. And some other people I haven't interviewed of the big tech CEOs, but I find some of them are not even so interesting as people, and because their message can be very controlled. I think, for example, when I interviewed Jeff Bezos, he was just so on message the whole time. It was really kind of hard to get something interesting out of him that was just slightly besides the company line that I've read about many times before. A person I would really love to interview who is not the tech CEO per se is Lina Khan. Lina Khan is the who leads the antitrust the antitrust agency, Federal Trade Commission, and so she just basically filed the antitrust lawsuit against Amazon, and she stands for a whole new philosophy on antitrust and how to regulate the big tech companies. I find that super fascinating, and she's like 33 years old or something. She's super young. I find her very fascinating. I would love to interview her.
Great choice. I still remember how energized I came out of an interview you conducted with one of our clients that I had a chance to attend. And I was especially impressed how thoughtful your preparation was and also your interview style. I realized that you all the time wanted to break through the corporate messaging, but in a very nice and interesting way. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on how you prepare and how you try to interview people.
Well, thanks for saying that. I mean, I think really the biggest rule for me is really just a very, very simple rule. Just really do your homework and prepare. And I really do for every interview, regardless if it's Bill Gates or if it's a much, much smaller company, because I don't want to... I want this to matter and to count. I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste the person who I talk to time. And so it really means doing the research about a particular company, if it's a CEO I'm talking to, and really before the interview, being sort of clear, why does this company matter? Why is it interesting? Why is it interesting to German readers? What would a German reader want to know about it? What would the German reader ask? And then I just really come up with a list of questions that I actually put on a piece of paper, and I come up with some kind of choreography, and I come up with some, because those interviews can be very different. Sometimes people just sort of, they talk too much and they'll get to the point and then you run out of time. And then some people are just very, very, they just don't talk enough. So sometimes you have to be prepared for all those cases, and you have to make sure that, you know, you have to know the questions that have the highest priority, to make sure you have those questions in, but also ask them in a particular order. But then also making sure to leave room for spontaneous questions and follow-up questions, that is very, very important. So I try to not only stick to my choreography, but to follow up. So it is, the biggest thing for me is really just straight up preparation.
Is there a specific atmosphere you want to create in an interview?
I don't know, as in, what do you mean, like particularly friendly, or maybe to put them on their feet, or to be...
Exactly, like different styles for different people.
It really can be very different depending on what kind of feel I get for that person. But I mean, I definitely want people to be at ease when they talk to me. It's not necessarily that different approaches. I think some people want to have like a very confrontational question right off the bat, so the interview partner is sort of like this and gets under pressure a little. I think I'm not like that. Well, I just find I get more out of people when when they feel at ease a little bit, and then you just have to sort of go with the flow, see how it goes.
Right, so following up on this, we are keen to know a little bit more about the best way to collaborate with you. And perhaps my first question is, you know, there are a lot of, like, everyone knows roughly what journalism is, but there are also a lot of misconception. What would be the one thing you would like PR professionals, also their client, to know about the role of a journalist?
I mean, I think you just have to be aware of all the stakeholders involved in this. So the PR professionals are stakeholders. I am a stakeholder. Then there's, for me, the reader is a stakeholder. And so then, and then for you, the PR professionals, either you're the agency, whoever company you're working for is a stakeholder. So there's all those stakeholders, and we're trying to serve those stakeholders in some way. And we might not have the same stakeholders in mind. I mean, obviously, the PR professionals and the journalists, we are not on the same team. You know, just by nature, we are not. We have different stakeholders to think about. So for me, it's the reader is the most important stakeholder. That's it. Not the PR professional, the reader. Yeah. I'm not here to please the PR professional.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that there cannot be win-win situations. There definitely can be. There can be a CEO interview, or in many cases where at the end, everybody involved is happy, the journalist and the PR person and the CEO and the reader. That is obviously not always true, but it can be true. I mean, yeah. The other thing, of course, is if it's really about not so much about an interview, but it's about, you know, getting information out of a company that a company doesn't necessarily want to give. So that is obviously something completely different that is a more inherently confrontational approach.
Yeah. And, you know, what kind of advice would you give to a young person starting in PR? Is it like what you just mentioned about like really thinking about the audience? Or do you have any other advice to share?
Yeah, I mean, definitely know your customer. Yeah, I mean, I'm, as a journalist, not the customer, but know the people you're dealing with and what their stakeholders are, and be mindful of that. And just like the journalist ideally does, I mean, be prepared and do your work. I mean, before I talk to people, I try to do my research, yeah. And then it might help for the other side maybe to do some research on me as well, like what to kind of find out who I am, what things I write about, and to yeah. offer me things that are interesting to me.
And can you like share maybe one example of the smartest way a PR expert approached you?
It gets a little hard to find this one example, but I mean, as I just said, it is generally very helpful when PR professionals make clear that they know who I am,
yeah.
and they. And that they have also, you know, it is definitely always a good strategy if you can pitch something and say, I've read this article of yours, and here's this pitch that I have. And I think because you wrote this article, this pitch that I have must be interesting to you as well.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that has to be true. But if you can make that case, then it's definitely helpful to make that case and gets my attention if you make that case, for sure.
Yeah, it's all about.
And it's, yeah. And it just, I guess when you just learn about the other side, maybe sometimes there's also a little bit of flattery involved. It's also for me, like when I do the interviews and I do prepare for the interviews, I kind of make it clear that the person I'm talking to knows that I'm prepared.
Yeah.
You know, I would talk about a fact that makes clear that I did my research, and that sometimes actually does have the effect of you know, making people open up a little bit more,
yeah.
because they see, okay, this person actually spent time on you know, finding out about me, and it also flatters them a little bit, possibly.
Yeah.
Just like when the PR professional, you know, talks to me and knows about me, there's maybe a tiny little bit of flattery involved as well. So, okay, that's great. I mean, this person, you know, really, really spent time to learn about me.
Yeah, I guess it's all about like really trying to build a connection, a relationships create a connection. Yeah. And without, of course, like without mentioning any names, can you share an example of a particularly bad pitch that you received, and maybe also the reason maybe that didn't work?
I mean, so what's generally a bad pitch is if things get too much into the product side of a company, because I generally, you know, I'm not a product journalist. So if you are just trying to sell me an obvious product pitch and make it even worse by offering me a spokesperson who is clearly like a product and marketing person, a communications person, and not like a strategic top management person, then that is usually a bad pitch.
Yeah.
Then I'm usually not so interested in that. The other thing that can go really wrong is if the PR professionals or the PR side is trying to be sort of too controlling with everything, with all the parameters around an interview, for example. So in terms of, for example, discussing questions in advance, and so to a certain degree you do that and it makes sense. So with we have this interview, let's what are sort of like the areas that we want to cover, but I'm not going to give you like a catalog of questions, and you really should not ask me to. The other thing is authorization of quotes and and interviews. That is obviously very different in Germany than it is in the US. So I mean, the rule of thumb is in Germany things are authorized, in the US not so much. So I usually don't do it. There are some exceptions, but I usually don't do it. But I do remember this one case. It was a and I thought for them it was very unprofessional and a missed opportunity in the end. So it was about a maker of grills, barbecues, a very famous one, American one with a German sounding name. And so we were thinking about, I think it was summer or something. We were like, oh, why don't we look at this company? Nobody knows anything about this company. And then we were trying to set up this interview with the German CEOs of them. And then they were so controlling, and they wanted really both. They wanted a detailed catalog of questions, and they wanted full authorization. And then I said, sorry, deal breaker for me. And then they said, deal breaker for us. And then I thought, how stupid of them. That was like such a missed opportunity, because I think that our paper would have been a great environment for this. Yeah. And it probably would have been a harmless story for them. It was not that this company was just in the news for anything controversial or any exploding grills or something. It probably would have been a good story for them. And they just let it slide because they wanted to be too controlling. So that was a bad PR example for me.
Yeah, I guess in this case, they forgot about the different stakeholders involved in making a story successful.
Yeah.
How long do you say will it take you to put together an article? And can you say how many articles on an average day you produce?
It's really very different, because sometimes the articles are like this, and sometimes they're small, and sometimes they're really big. So a small one I can put together relatively quickly. And if it's really a big report about something, then it can take me a couple of days or 3 days. It really depends. I usually do several stories a day, or often I do several stories a day. They're not all massively big, though.
So. Yeah. And, you know, you being based in the US, working for a German publication, like, what time does your day start?
Yeah, very early. So we have, even though we are now very much online, we still do have a newspaper. And so there still is an actual deadline, and that is quite early for me. It's 3:30 German time, which is my time, 9:30 a.m. So that's very early. So I basically have to get up no later than 5:30 and go straight to work. Since I work from home, I can really go straight out of bed, straight to the desk, which is good.
Yeah, that's the perk of working from home. And what's the best time then to contact you?
Not during those times in the morning.
Yeah.
So that is a bad time before 9:30. So please, I want to send a message out, but that's a bad time.
Yeah, so best to contact you like during your night, early morning German time, or after, like later in the day in Germany?
Yeah, whatever is after my deadline in the US works for me. Yeah, but I think it's also in terms of communicating, I think it's really gone virtual so much. I get much, much fewer phone calls than I used to. I mean, most people really do email first before they call.
And that's actually my follow-up question. Like, do you miss that, or do you prefer being emailed? And can you say, like, roughly how many emails you receive by day?
I think I definitely do prefer emails, because that gives me more time to react to it and to decide whether I want to react or not. And if it's an inconvenient time, then I don't need to react right away. And if I have someone on the phone, then I have to deal with that someone right away. I mean, sometimes I want that for a story and it's important for me, but sometimes when it's sort of unprovoked, then maybe not. How many emails do I get? It's gotten a little less since we're now communicating through things like Teams much, much more. So basically all the emails that used to be internal emails within the company, and those were many, many, many every day, those are now all on platforms like Teams. So it's less emails. So it's not even so many. It's still obviously dozens and dozens of emails, but it's not so many.
And do you have like any kind of ways where you kind of filter out all your all the different email you receive, just to really like focus on the most important ones?
I mean, they're definitely out of the dozens and dozens that I get, there's really just a handful usually that are interesting to me. So, and obviously I kind of know which senders are, there's a lot of people who send me an email who I know, then yes, then I will obviously pay attention. If I don't know them, I might not pay attention. I mean, obviously, and I guess that's also for someone to newly approach me, it's kind of important to make that very clear in both the subject line and very much in the beginning of an email, why I should pay attention.
Yeah, that's interesting what you're saying, because at Taito we have what we call a golden circle of key journalists. So, you know, kind of a handful of journalists that we try to nurture and we really go to. And I guess at your end, you also have maybe like a golden circle of key contacts that you keep going back because you trust them. But obviously we need to prove ourselves first before getting into this golden circle.
Sure. And when you've worked with certain people over the years and you've worked on stories with them and you kind of know they, you know, the proposals to make, the pitches they make, usually they thought about them and they oftentimes they're interesting to me. And we also have a relationship where I still can easily say no, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, they're just certain people that with whom communication gets just more and more seamless over the years, for sure.
And maybe perhaps a slight different question, like how important are data for you, like for your stories? Are they really important, or on the contrary, do you have some kind of data fatigue where, you know, constantly there are new surveys, new percentage coming up, and it's maybe not as relevant anymore?
Yeah, I would say maybe less important than it used to be.
Okay.
I think sort of numbers generally less important than they used to be. Also probably paying a little less attention to, for example, quarterly earnings reports than I used to. I still follow the big ones very much, but not every company anymore. And in terms of data, like, I mean, some things are of course very important, like some market share data, like how is, or market forecasts, for example, how are Twitter user numbers or ad revenues, how are they projected into the future under Elon Musk? Those kinds of things are very, very important or interesting to me. So like when they are connected to a bigger ongoing storyline, then they are very interesting. But I don't necessarily need to follow like every 3 months, what are the market shares of PC makers?
Yeah.
No.
And finally, our last question, is there a specific story or topic that you believe deserves more attention? On the flip side of this is, like, on the contrary, what's the topic that you're fed up to write about?
Definitely probably writing a little bit too much about Elon Musk. There's definitely an overkill there. What deserves more attention? I personally find the whole topic on tech regulation very, very interesting. And maybe not everybody finds it as interesting as I do, but I find it interesting, and I find it even more interesting now with AI being so important, and the regulatory aspects of it, and also how AI, you know, might possibly or not reshuffle the power structure among big tech, and what that means for the regulatory environment. I find that very, very fascinating, and that probably deserves more coverage than it gets.
Are you still interested in the topic of AI outside of regulatories?
Of course. I mean, because it is so, there are so many questions around AI, what it means for all of us, what it means for our jobs, what it means for our kids in school, what it means for everything. So obviously AI is just a multifaceted thing.
Interesting. I was afraid that you might be have too much AI in your subject lines in your emails.
Well, I mean, sometimes, of course, I get those emails or that are, you know, because AI is such a buzzword that I'm being pitched on something that supposedly AI, but it's not really an AI story. Like, you know, an email would start with everybody talking about AI these days, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, oh, it's maybe an interesting AI story, but then it's actually not really. Like, someone was just putting that word AI there, like, to get my attention. So that definitely happens.
I see. So thank you very much for joining us today, Roland.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure.
I really enjoyed getting such a straightforward perspective from you on your work and PR. And I hope our listeners enjoyed this conversation with Roland as much as we did. If you have any feedback on today's episode, contact the title team on LinkedIn or X, or comment on the video episode of the podcast on YouTube. You can also drop us an email at hello@titlepr.com. And thanks for listening in, and see you soon.
Following Up is a Without Borders podcast series produced by pan-European B2B tech PR and communications agency Taito. You can find every interview on YouTube and all major podcast platforms. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode.